This is Jay Sekulow, A Week in Review.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We've got a lot to talk about. It's been quite a week. But before we do that, I wanted to talk about what's coming up as we celebrate Memorial Day. And in the studio with me here is Colonel Wes Smith. Colonel Smith, of course, is a senior military analyst for the ACLJ. But let's talk about Memorial Day. We're celebrating those that gave the ultimate sacrifice. And sometimes people conflate Memorial Day and Veterans Day, but let's talk about what the Memorial Day holiday is all about.
Right. Memorial Day is a federal holiday in which we honor those who have died in military service, and is often, as you said, confused with Veterans Day. But Veterans Day is a day where we celebrate the service of all U.S. military personnel, both the living and the dead, whereas Memorial Day, we simply honor those who have died.
You know, there's a great quote that you have up on a post at ACLJ.org. It's from Winston Churchill. "We sleep soundly in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm." You've served in combat. You've served in conflict zones. We celebrate the fact that there are men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line. But that's what the Memorial Day holiday is about, is those who have really not only been willing to do it, but have actually done it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's celebrating people who have died in order that we might enjoy the freedoms that we do. And there are a lot of traditions surrounding Memorial Day, Jay. But one of my most memorable traditions is when I was assigned to the Pentagon, and this is something that happens all around the world where military people are stationed, but we had what we call flags in, and all the soldiers in the military district of Washington were asked to go to Arlington National Cemetery, and we would get a bundle of flags, walk through that cemetery, and make sure that every person buried there had an American flag decorating their grave. It is a very sacred holiday, almost a holy day in America.
You know this better than anyone because you served as the chaplain in charge at Dover. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know about your experience there, what were you in charge of?
We were in charge of the dignified transfers, which are the reception of the bodies of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who have died overseas. It was an honor to do that. But yeah, during my time there, I was personally involved in the ceremonies of 1,116 deceased service members and was able to sit down with each of their families as well. When you have that kind of experience up close and personal, and I'm not saying that I am unique, it was an honor to do it, but it makes Memorial Day a very, very sacred and close to your heart.
When you had the families of and the loved ones of someone, of a soldier who died in service to the country, what did you tell them?
You listen more than you talk. And the thing that I found so moving and amazing, I never had a family, even in the middle of their grief, that did not express pride in the sacrifice of their loved one. And Memorial Day, you know, when I think about it, I think about the sacrifice not only of the men and women who died in military service. I remember these families. They are also heroes, and they have sacrificed. And so on Memorial Day, those families come to mind as well.
You had difficult ones. They're all difficult, I'm
yes.
sure. When you were to talk with the family, just give me a 30-second view of this, and you talk about the sacrifice they gave, mm-hmm. and you listened, but then it was time for you to say something. What would you say?
I would tell them that the nation is grateful and assure them of our prayers and our support, and that the citizens of the United States were mindful of them and their sacrifices, families.
Well, there you have it. Discussion with Colonel Wes Smith. Sorry, we're going to turn to some news in just a moment to kind of give you an update on what has happened this week. But we would be remiss to not mention the fact that we are getting ready to honor those who have given the ultimate sacrifice for their country as we celebrate Memorial Day. Let's not forget those men and women that did do that, that stood up for us, stood up for our country, stood up for freedom. We'll be back with more, including comments on what's happening in the news right after this.
God bless our country, here in America. God bless the USA.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Let me say this. We're talking about, of course, the big news is that the United States has canceled its participation in the what's called the Singapore summit. The president issued a very strong letter on that where he was very clear that the threat about nuclear weapons would meet a threat back. And he said, you talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God they will never have to be used. President left open the opportunity that things could change and they could still meet, even meet June 12th. Listen to this, number 25.
A lot of things can happen, including the fact that perhaps, and would wait, it's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. Nobody should be anxious. We have to get it right.
All right, so there you have it. The president, so nothing is, I mean, let's go around the table on this first. First, I'd like to get reaction in our from the social media standpoint of what people are saying, what they're thinking. We've discovered, you know, discussed this over the last few days. And frankly, we have been concerned about this really from the outset, that this could happen, although we did get the hostages out, which is a good thing.
Yeah, comments are coming in like from Debbie. She said, not stunned on this development, but I believe it still could happen down the road. Laura said, I'm glad the hostages were released before the talks were canceled. So
yeah.
That's at least a positive. And yeah, those are general kind of comments.
So here's the question. I'm going to start with this one. Why did they release the hostages, Jordan?
I think because this regime is in disarray and not sure what to do with President Trump. I mean, there's reports they're reading books there. They're trying to figure out how to deal with this president. They've been used to the kind of the same U.S. policy. You know, sitting over Bill Richardson and sitting over former U.S. officials to do the bidding of the United States. Not much retribution for their actions. I do want to say we really did isolate North Korea. We put a lot of pressure on China to isolate North Korea. And so we've talked about that, their fuel shortages. We know about the food shortages there, power shortages there. But ultimately, this, I think, points to a fact that a regime that takes two steps forwards is like five steps back. So it's again, it takes a lot of time to get forward because you're only taking a couple steps forward and then you're threatening nuclear war where they cut. So you're taking many steps back. And it's going to take, you know, time to get forward again. But the U.S., the president's not saying, I will never meet with you. And President Trump did not say that in this letter. So he is giving the opening to the leader of North Korea to kind of say to these other officials in his country, knock it off.
Yeah. Wes?
Yeah, I think they released the hostages. And Jordan's right. They're still trying to figure out Donald Trump. But I think they release the hostages expecting that we would do what previous administrations have done, and that is give them wide sanctions. They expected something in return, and maybe they got a little something, but they're not quite sure how to negotiate with Donald Trump.
Harry, you're diligently writing there. What are you thinking?
Well, first, we walked away from the JCPOA because there were no verifiable inspections. Today, we have walked away from the summit because up till now, the North Koreans have not shown that they are serious about denuclearizing the North Korean peninsula. Taken together, I think this shows that the Trump doctrine of maximum pressure is working. We are prepared to walk away unless our enemies are willing to deal with us on a basis which suggests that they are serious about change. If they're not serious, we are prepared to walk away, and we will not back down.
They really need this more than we desire it.
Yeah, no, we've said that. I mean, this is more important for them than it was for us. But it was in Pelosi. If you could have gotten them to the table, it would have been a good thing to start the process. But it's not over with yet. None of it's over yet. All right.
All right. Yep. Let's go to Joanne, who's calling in Cleveland. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Hey. My question is kind of simplistic. I mean, is there like a big diehard element in this upper echelon military that's telling him, we are not giving this stuff up? You know, you are not doing this, like that he would fear?
In other words, that does he have military leadership skip in place that has got him now to the point where they said, you leave the country, you're done? I mean, do you think, is that possible? Or, I mean, we know the troops, by and large, are starving. I mean, that's a real situation. But what about the leadership?
I think it's the leadership he has to worry about. The leadership has tasted the good life as it exists in North Korea. They have begun to see that their status is beginning to go down because of the ineptness of the regime. And I think what they're looking at is we have to be very careful. We can't give up the only thing we have that the United States values cheaply. And if you go and give it up, I think they may say, or if you're willing to give it up, then I think the military may step in and say, no, we've had enough. And that's why I think Kim Jong-un fears leaving the country, because the problem with these types of societies, all you have to do is knock off a few people at the top and you control everything. Because
he's knocked off his own people at the top. I mean, this guy.
Well, he has, but he was the most top, so to speak. He was the highest. And therefore, I mean, he does have a coterie around him that are very loyal. But if he's out of the country, those will be protecting him, and they can be cleaned out pretty easily by other military folks.
Let's go ahead and take another call.
Stephanie's calling in California online too. You're on the air, Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
I had a question, kind of going to what the last caller said, but taking it a little step further. In the statement that was given to the United States from North Korea, you know, kind of giving the rhetoric of possibly, war. Could it be that the military is already taken over and that Kim Jong-un didn't even approve the statement that went out? I mean, could it be that they're already running things and that's why there's such a drastic change all of a sudden?
That's a very good question.
I don't know that they're already running things, but I think they could be trying to undermine, just like we've talked about our own government, and I think it's probably to a much greater extent. Skip was just talking about that. The idea that there are going to be elements who don't like these changes and may attempt to undermine. So this vice foreign minister has been in place longer than Kim Jong-un. She has been their lead nuclear negotiator for the past, before he came to power.
During his father's regime.
That's right. So there's definitely those holdovers, and they could be, as much power as he has, they could be a serious threat. He is still one person. They turn on him, he is gone. It is very different when you deal with a dictatorship and a hermit state.
Yep. There's a lot of undercurrent on all this, Wes. I mean, there's a lot of things at play, a lot of issues at play.
There certainly are. I mean,
because the fact is they shut down the communication. Really, Pompeo was just there, 2.5 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah, where the hostages were out, and then they had the area where they went to the demilitarized zone and did the handshake, and then all of a sudden they go silent. So
Something happened internally. We don't know about the palace intrigue, but when you rule the way that he does, you have a lot of power, but you also make a lot of enemies.
Well, I think if we consider the internal politics within the North Korean regime, we should note that Chairman Kim is relatively young, and he is surrounded by officials who are much older. So there is a distinction between a short-term calculus and a long-term calculus. It's possible that Chairman Kim would see the fruits of a nuclear deal with the United States in terms of the economic, long-term economic advancement of North Korea, but in the short run, that would impose a cost on many of the high-ranking officials within the North Korean hierarchy.
All right, let's take another call here because we're getting calls coming at 1-800-684-3110.
All right, Mark's calling in Ohio on line one. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, is this Jay?
Yes, sir.
Hey, I served on the DMZ in the Korean Peninsula in 1970 and 1971.
Thank you for your service.
I pray. People say, I wear a Korea veteran's hat, and people say, Mr. Clark, you don't look old enough to be a Korean veteran. And I say, well, the Korean War has never come to finality.
Well, look, I think the goal here is to get to a workable solution, but there's a process to go through, and that process to go through is complicated. It's nine-dimensional thinking. Skip, you also served. Wes, you served in the region. You know the situation there. Skip, you said that in the different tours you had there, you could tell different things were happening, different aspects of what was going on in the country as it was evolving. But I think they probably realized as this thing got close that this might actually happen. And somebody inside that regime scuttled this. It may have been Kim Jong-un himself. Maybe not. Maybe it was others. I don't know. But something happened here because they did release those hostages and they did have Pompeo there. And they did cross the DMZ.
You know, I think there's a number of things. And one of the things we were talking about is that message that came from the foreign ministry that was so bellicose. And it could very well have been they were floating an idea because they are trying to figure out what the rules are. And that would give Kim Jong-un some plausible deniability, saying this person spoke without authority, and therefore that's not the view that we have, and therefore we still can meet. I think he's left himself some maneuver room here. We need at least to take that into account. But you're right. I think right now they're trying to feel out what are the rules. I believe they thought they would get some type of relief by releasing the hostages.
Yep.
And when they got minimal relief, they said, wow, the rules have changed. What do we do now? And I think they're trying to figure that out now.
Remember, there's a lot coming out in the hours and days ahead. We'll keep you posted. Don't forget also to stay engaged with us. Logan will let you know the multiple platforms you could do that.
Yeah, make sure you follow us on all social media outlets, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us broadcasting live each and every day, Monday through Friday, here on Facebook and Periscope. Again, that's at ACLJ.org. We appreciate everybody for watching and staying in touch with us. Make sure you follow us. Like I said, sign up for the email list, subscribe to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
So here's what the proposal from the president through the Health and Human Services does. It requires physical and financial separation between the Title X programs and facilities that those who perform abortion or support referrals to abortion. So if you do the, either one of those, you're not getting the money. That affects Planned Parenthood to the tune of about $60 million. Requires all Title X recipients to document and report potential instances of rape, incest, or sexual abuse, because some of these cases were coming in and the agencies, the abortion clinics, wouldn't refer the criminality of the situation over. So that's something the states have been pushing for. Requires parental consent for minors seeking family planning services at Title X clinics in most instances. So those are kind of the normal things that you would see put in place. But I'll tell you this, none of the funds appropriated under Title X shall be used in programs where abortion is a method of family planning. Here's what the president said of this, Byte 24.
For decades, American taxpayers have been wrongfully forced to subsidize the abortion industry through Title X federal funding. So today, we have kept another promise. My administration has proposed a new rule to prohibit Title X funding from going to any clinic that performs abortions.
So that's to the tune of about $60 million. I'm holding for our Facebook TV audience. Here is the regulations. Now, to do this change, it's about more than an inch thick, just to get this change in place.
This is what it takes to strip out regulations that have been on the books for decades. 130 pages to literally enforce one line in the federal code, Jay. That one line says, none of the funds appropriated under this title shall be used in programs where abortion is a method of family planning. That's what the Congress intended back in 1970. Ronald Reagan tried to implement it. Bill Clinton reversed it. And, Jay, not until President Trump do we have a restoration of that. And I'll say one thing about Planned Parenthood. They are now in the unfortunate position for them of having to simultaneously say, abortion is only 3% of our business. And at the same time, Jay, claiming that this change by President Trump will cripple them. It cannot be both. But yeah. I'll make a prediction. They're not going to separate their services because abortion is really at the core of their business.
No, abortion is their business. So I think we have to be clear with what the situation is. You're talking about $60 million from Planned Parenthood. It's a far cry from the $400 million. But it's 13% of that $400 million in the stroke of a pen and 130 pages of regulations. But understand this. They are going to be out there fighting aggressively. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to have to be prepared for a battle on this over the next 30 to 60 days. Look, this regulation went to the Supreme Court once, called Russ versus Sullivan, back in the late 80s, and we won 5-4. So this could be a fight. They may file I suspect they will file lawsuits. We have to be prepared. Let's go back, Logan, to the phones here.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Andrew, who's calling in Texas on line two.
Andrew, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I run a Christian adoption agency in Southlake, Texas, and I just wanted to tell you, interestingly enough, about the timing. So I just met with a birth mother that had gone to Planned Parenthood 4 days ago, and the doctor said, and very rudely, oh, you're too far along. So she decided to meet with me because I do adoptions, which is, you know, and then to hear Donald Trump do this, you know, which representing all adoption agencies, you know, we say thank you to him. And also, what's interesting is I just got an email from somebody from the Huffington Post asking about same-sex couples. Do we work with them? Because it's just another form of attack.
So, yeah, but let me ask you a question about from the adoption agency. You're not getting any federal funding, though, right?
Oh no, I'm a for-profit private adoption agency. Yeah, so because of that, I don't get any funding.
But you're saying you ended up getting a mother to come to you because the abortionist said you're beyond the weeks that they'll perform an abortion.
Yeah, she said that the people there were so rude to her, and that she felt like a
yeah. Because
a
that's their understand, Andrew, and you know this. It's because their business impact there is they lost a customer.
That's absolutely right. So when they talk about this critical reproductive health care and women and family planning, they're not talking about any of that. They don't care about women. They don't care about planning a family. They care about abortion. Period. Yeah. So that's why he's upset. He doesn't get to do an abortion.
They don't get to make the sale. I mean, that's it. It's a sale to them and. Again, you look at you talked about how many a day. I mean, you're talking about probably, you're edging up to almost 1,000 a day, so probably 800, 900 abortions a day. Their total non-abortion prenatal services is 4,000. I would imagine that
in most major cities, a facility that does prenatal health for women that is not an abortion clinic, if you're in a major city, does more than that in a year in one city. And yet that's what Planned Parenthood does nationally.
Yeah.
Is 4,000 prenatal non-abortion visits.
Here's a question that people, I think, would ask is, what happens to this money? So, Than the $60 million is, not, like Jordan says, not going out of the budget. It's being reallocated.
No, it goes to other centers that actually provide family planning services, and consistent with the law that was passed. So, Jay, it will go further because it will not be diluted down to a business model that is just funneling towards abortion. And so, you know, the left is going to make this about health care for women. Jay, this will service more women. And in fact, you know, Jordan alluded to some of these numbers, but I like to phrase it this way. 330,000 pregnant women walk into a Planned Parenthood every year. You know how many of those 330,000 get an abortion? 324,000. Only 6,000 fall through the cracks of that business model. That's pretty shocking.
Well, that means that their success, their closure rate per unit, if that's how they look at it, by the way, they call it unit, is not about 97%. So you see, I mean,
and
97% of the people that come in end up getting an abortion.
Right, and the 3% might be just like what we just heard from our caller, just someone who's too far along, and so they had to send them away.
And they fought, by the way, remember how they fought for the too far along? Because they wanted to be in the partial birth abortion business where they have the child partially delivered and then perform the abortion. I worked on those cases ultimately at the Supreme Court, and we won. But we tried them in New York and California, and they were fighting to do an abortion during delivery. That's the technique they were utilizing. So it kind of tells you what it is. All right, let's go ahead. We can grab another call, Logan.
All right, I think. Sure, yeah, we can go to Tom really quick in Connecticut on line one.
Hey, Tom.
Yes, Jay. This is great news, but it's until, you know, we know who's going to be the watchdog to watch, because you don't think they're not going to lie about this.
Well, no, here's the thing. It's the way the regulation's written, it's very cut and dry. There's not wiggle room in this. I mean, if your facility's performing abortions, you don't qualify, period. And they're going to have to certify that under the penalty of perjury.
Right. And that's part of the application that they have to do that Jordan talked about earlier. Yeah. There is this a long application, and if they do any abortions, they don't get that funding.
All right, so Than, here's the question. We already are seeing it. I mean, we're already seeing the fundraising letters. What do you expect to be happening during the next 60 to 90 day period?
Well, in the next 60 days, they're going to be gathering those comments from us and the other side. I really do expect it to be in the hundreds of thousands, Jay. And look, let's just put it very simply. Those comments, Jay, are going to be the foundation for the legal challenge that will follow. This will certainly be challenged.
Yep.
And we're going to be in court, just like we have been over the decades, defending this regulation. And, Jay, one of the things that we'll be talking about is why this physical separation of facilities is so critical to actually enforce the law. Because, look, we've seen this at Planned Parenthoods for decades. They take the funds. They shift them around and they use them elsewhere. The only way to achieve this is the physical separation of facilities.
Yep. All right. We're going to talk about this, and we got a lot more ahead coming up in the next 30 minutes. So, Logan, let everybody know how they can engage. We got some phone lines open. We want to continue talking about this.
That's right. We are open right now for your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Have another half hour coming up. If you don't get us in your local station, you can find us broadcasting live right now. Facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope and Twitter @JaySekulow. And give us a call, like I said, 1-800-684-3110. You do put some comments in. If you're watching online, I'll take some of those during the show, during the break. Also, we play exclusive video, give exclusive content to those who watch online. So take a look. Again, ACLJ.org, Facebook, and Periscope.
All right, we also have our book, Jerusalem, is now available for pre-order at Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. So we encourage you to go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble to pre-order the book, Jerusalem. So that's available now. We encourage you to do that. We're going to take more of your calls and comments. We come back from the break at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. It is Memorial Day weekend, and we are celebrating those men and women that gave the ultimate sacrifice. Let me go to Colonel Wes Smith here. Served as a chaplain in the United States Army. You've served all over the world, but you served also at Dover, served at the Pentagon. What does Memorial Day mean to the men and women that are currently serving?
Yeah, they remember their fallen brothers and sisters. You know, military service, Jay, is inherently dangerous. Yep. People die in deployments. They die in training accidents. They die in combat. And I think to a person on Memorial Day, the men and women who wear this uniform realize that they don't want the sacrifice of those who have died to be in vain. They want to stand up and to be counted for freedom and for justice.
Yeah, I want to say something here. At the end of the broadcast, we're going to play the tune that we did, God Bless the USA, with Lee Greenwood. So we'll do that at the end of the broadcast today. So you want to stay tuned for that. Let me, because three or four questions have come to mind. As I said at the earlier in the broadcast in the last half hour, that you've served in Dover where you took the dignified transfer. And I asked you the question of what you say to the families, and you said you do a lot of listening.
A lot of listening. There is nothing that you can say that's going to take away their grief and their sorrow. What I found out, Jay, often as I sit with the families whose loved one was out on the tarmac, we were getting ready to do a ceremony to receive their body, to give them their final homecoming. The families often ended up ministering to me and to my team more than we did to them. They were brave. They were grateful. They were proud of their loved ones who gave their lives in the service of our nation.
And I asked you the question also about when you're hearing from them. But I think about now, we've got conflict zones all over the world. And we've been talking about that on radio. We've got a situation now in North Korea negotiations right now are off. That's a conflict zone. You've been there. You've been to the Middle East where we've got conflict ongoing. I mean, you think about the nature of the conflict, yet men and women continue to sign up to serve their country, knowing, as you said, it's dangerous.
You know, that was one of the most moving things about being at Dover, and that was something that my colleagues and I discussed often, and that is we have an all-volunteer army. No one has to serve, and yet even in the height of the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, young men and women from all over this great country would raise their hand and say, I want to serve. That service in and of itself was very, very moving and touching.
What would you say when you did a dignified return and young families oftentimes sometimes these kids were 22 years old or younger.
Younger.
So you had the parents. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the spouse. Oftentimes it wasn't the spouse.
Right.
Oftentimes I'm sure it was a multi-generation military service.
Yes.
How does that impact things?
You know, so many of the young people who joined the service, their parents or their grandparents have served. And that patriotism runs deep in these families and their love of country. And it's so not political, Jay. These were people from all walks of life and all political stripes. The one thing that every family I talked to had in common was that they loved our country and they were willing to serve and they were willing to sacrifice.
And they continue to serve. And the families continue to serve.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that people overlook in this is you've got Veterans Day, we're celebrating all the veterans. But on Memorial Day, we're focusing on the men and women who gave the ultimate sacrifice. And it still is to me, and I never served in the military, but it's still amazing to me. And it does make you proud of our country and these young men and women. They're still signing up. There's still no draft. We don't have a draft in the United States anymore.
Right.
These are voluntary serving to stand for that freedom.
Right. And they know when they volunteer that they are potentially putting their life on the line, Jay, for people like you and me.
Yeah, every day. So we could do what we're doing right now and talk about these issues and have freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion. This is an incredible thing when you think about it, what these men and women have done. Ultimate sacrifice. We'll talk more about the news when we came back from the break. At the end of the broadcast, we're going to play the God Bless the USA song that we did with Lee Greenwood in our studios. I had a great opportunity to play with him and he came in and performed with our band, and what a great tune. In fact, let's take a listen.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. So here's what Mike Pompeo's laid out. We call this the Trump doctrine, and that is maximum pressure being put on Iran. It's going to have an impact on the Iranian people, not because you want to harm the Iranian people, but because when you put economic sanctions in place, that's how change happens in these countries. And we've seen that time and time again. So we're taking your call on all of this at 1-800-684-3110. But let me tell you what the three goals are this. Apply unprecedented financial pressure, deter Iranian aggression, advocate tirelessly for the Iranian people, and then he laid out 12 demands for Iran. But let's break down these three points at the top here. I think it's important. Applying unprecedented financial pressure. Jordan, during the break, we talked about some of the numbers. I mean, Europe, because this is the question. The Europeans are saying they want to stay in the deal. The question is, can Europe save the deal?
No, because Europe can stay in the deal, but their businesses don't necessarily have to or can't. Because if you can't do business with Iran anymore and also do business with the United States, so if your money's going through U.S. financial institutions, even if you're not doing business deals in the U.S., but your money is going through a U.S. bank, it's touching the New York Stock Exchange, touching a U.S. financial institution, you can't do business deals with Iran, and it's not a good business decision. Check this out. I mean, just listen. In the EU countries, so this is talking about those countries that they say can save the deal. They bought and sold during 2017 when they had this opening with Iran, about $25 billion in goods with Iran. They bought and sold $720 billion goods with the United States. So with the United States pulling out, Europe cannot save the deal. It shows the weakness of the EU and the weakness of their financial markets and the world's reliance on our financial markets. So we can take the lead.
Yeah.
And by doing so, we are crippling the economy. And Mike Pompeo said it's going to be the strongest sanctions in history when they are complete with them.
So you already know that there was a $2 billion gas project. Will Haynes pointed this out at the beginning of the broadcast, our producer. $200 billion gas project with a company called Total.
Yep.
And this is a French company. They've stopped it. That deal's not going
to
happen.
So that was going to be $2 billion to that,
So
invest
that's
into the Iranian economy.
10% of it right there.
Yeah.
10% of their economy already affected. Now, Siemens, big German company, same thing. They said, nope, we're not going to do it. So these governments can start saying these things, Stan, and I know there's some within in the American political base that are saying, well, can't we work this out? We're going to get into that in a moment. The president lays out what that would look like, but there is no question that we are applying the toughest. These are crippling sanctions being put on the Iranian regime.
They really are. And first of all, I mean, Jordan is correct. If the businesses of the world look at this and they have a choice between the United States and Iran, it's not a close call. I mean, they are going to choose the United States eventually. Now, you know, specifically and tactically, how does that work? The vast majority of the sanction authority, and we've walked through this on previous broadcasts, Jay, but the president already has it under pre-existing sanctions. And Mike Pompeo clearly said those sanctions are already back online. They will take, in some cases, up to 180 days to get fully implemented. We have about 155 days left in that process. But Jay, he also said if we need additional secondary sanctions, and that means if we need to put sanctions on other countries who don't follow our lead, then we will go back to Congress and ask for that. Jay, I suspect if they have to go back to Congress and ask for those, I think they're going to get bipartisan support.
That's good, because there's the political question here of whether it's going to take additional. Let's first play. Here's what Mike Pompeo said. Take a listen.
The sting of sanctions will be painful if the regime does not change its course from the unacceptable and unproductive path it has chosen to one that rejoins the League of Nations. These will indeed end up being the strongest sanctions in history when we are complete. The regime has been fighting all over the Middle East for years. After our sanctions come in force, it will be battling to keep its economy alive.
So here's what you have. I think this is important to understand. So by putting these sanctions in place, you're going to have both an economic impact, but it's also going to impact their ability to fund terrorism, because they are the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. They do that because they've had a free fall for the last several years because of the sanctions being removed. We haven't even gotten into the inspections, what the deal will look like. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the fact is that their economic engine being hit will impact the battle on terrorism.
Yeah, I mean, they've had pallets of cash delivered by the United States government even, so that they've been able to operate, as we talked about, not just inside their own country as human rights violators, but of course Iraq. You've got them involved in the Palestinian territories, supporting both Hamas. You've got, of course, they're the lead sponsor for Hezbollah. Basically, Hezbollah is a proxy. They are heavily involved in Syria. They are heavily involved in Yemen. They are launching rockets into Saudi Arabia. They are launching missiles into the UAE. This was not what Iran could get away with. They didn't even have the capabilities to do. They had a lot of tough rhetoric. But you go back 15 years ago, and Iran was not launching rockets into Saudi Arabia. They were not overthrowing Yemeni government. They weren't overthrowing, they weren't in direct conflict in Syria, in working with the Russians. So what you've seen now is Iran expand past just sponsoring their proxy to fight Israel. They've always kind of done that. They've been willing to put that ahead of feeding their own people, support for Hezbollah. But now they want to be this has emboldened them to be a regional, if not world player. And I think we can quickly, by implementing these sanctions, take that power away from Iran. So isolate Iran from the regional community, where they are no longer a threat and no longer a player in Syria, in Yemen, in the UAE, in the Gulf states. And I think that the last part is Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Hezbollah, I think they'd rather fund Hezbollah than feed their own people.
And that's a big statement. They'd rather
fund the
terrorists.
Because that's their proxy to fight Israel.
Yeah.
So that's what keeps them kind of, the death to Israel for real. It makes it real because it keeps it on the border.
So they'd rather fund Hezbollah. And remember those protests on the street? Do we have that sound? We'll see if we can get it. They were protesting on the street, stop funding Hezbollah, stop funding Hamas, feed the people. That's what happens when you put crippling sanctions in place. Let's go ahead and take calls. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to the first caller there.
Yeah, let's go to Donna in San Diego, California, on line 3. Donna, welcome to JSecure Live.
Hey, Donna.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have a parallel, I think, between the Reagan peace through strength doctrine and the Trump doctrine of fighting terrorism. Instead of bringing down the Iron Curtain, we want to bring down the terrorist curtain. And the terrorists need weakening, for sure. Do you see this sanction policy helping to bring down the terrorists?
So, I mean, that's a good question. And I think what Jordan just said is you have to understand something about this regime. They believe that they are a caliphate. They believe that they are establishing, we did a movie called The Export that dealt with this issue. They want to export the Iranian Revolution. Remember, the Ayatollahs got into power in 1979 because they exported and then were able to import their revolution, which created, it was a pretty pro-Western guy, was very pro-Western, and all of a sudden becomes this Islamic state. Now, the people do not want this. That's very clear when you see them in the streets. But the issue is going to be, as these crippling economic sanctions are put in place, what Jordan said is important, and that is, will they rather fund Hezbollah than feed their own people?
That's the last. I mean, I think that you would see them pull out of supporting, you know, Houthi rebels in Yemen first, than you would ever see them stop funding Hezbollah, or they'd stop funding Hamas, but not Hezbollah. They would stop maybe even back getting involved so much with the Assad regime, though it's important to them, than funding Hezbollah. And Hezbollah could still, by funding them, play a role in Syria, but maybe not the same as the Iranian Revolutionary Guard does directly. So there's a lot of things that would have to fall first in their
yep.
But those are all items, let me just reiterate, other than Hezbollah, that have happened because of the Iranian nuclear deal. We're only talking about an Iran engaged in Yemen and Iraq and Syria, and really outside of just Iran and then the Israeli Lebanese border with Hezbollah being there. That only happened under the Iranian nuclear deal. They did not have the ability to fund the Houthi rebels and to get involved in a conflict in Yemen. They did not have the ability to really run a war with the Russians in Syria against a group like ISIS. They did not have the ability to it would have been so dangerous for them to launch a missile at Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Now they have taken those provocative steps, and they're now going to face the consequences from the Trump administration, and by the way, being backed by the Gulf states. They backed this move.
Right. No question.
So regionally, we have a lot of support here.
Yeah. So listen, these are the protests. They're in Farsi. This was in the city of Qom, which is kind of that's their spiritual base for the Iranian revolution. This was back in December 29th of last year. Take a listen. So you had tens of thousands of people in the street chanting death to Hezbollah. So this is, and that's a real protest movement. Now, fan quickly here, the existing sanctions that are being implemented, it's important to reiterate this, the president has the authority to do this.
He has the authority to do it, and he has already done it. Yes, there's a turn-on time. It takes a while to fully implement them. But, Jay, it ties directly into this conversation you were having with Jordan, because the Iranian people understand this. They know that the United States sent a plane full of cash. Who did that go to? Did that benefit the people? No, they're still suffering. And, Jay, I'll tell you, the other thing I loved about this speech, how many times did Mike Pompeo return to that point that the United States is for the Iranian people?
So here's what you've got. I think this is the important part here. This is the beginning of a real crippling sanctions move by the administration. Maximum pressure should get maximum results. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-4110. So let me tell you this. Our book, Jerusalem, is now available for pre-order on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. We encourage you to pre-order. That's going to be coming out June 12th. So they'll get it to you. You know, they usually get it to you the next day or the day after. But we encourage you to go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, pre-order our book, Jerusalem Now, the most comprehensive defense of the state of Israel and Jerusalem. All right, back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue, not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
A lot to talk about. It's been quite a week. But before we do that, I wanted to talk about what's coming up as we celebrate Memorial Day. And in the studio with me here is Colonel Wes Smith. Colonel Smith, of course, is a senior military analyst for the ACLJ. But let's talk about Memorial Day. We're celebrating those that gave the ultimate sacrifice. And sometimes people conflate Memorial Day and Veterans Day, but let's talk about what the Memorial Day holiday is all about.
Right. Memorial Day is a federal holiday in which we honor those who have died in military service, and is often, as you said, confused with Veterans Day. But Veterans Day is a day where we celebrate the service of all U.S. military personnel, both the living and the dead, whereas Memorial Day, we simply honor those who have died.
You know, there's a great quote that you have up on a post at aclj.org. It's from Winston Churchill. "We sleep soundly in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm." You've served in combat. You've served in conflict zones. We celebrate the fact that there are men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line. But that's what the Memorial Day holiday is about, is those who have really not only been willing to do it, but have actually done it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's celebrating people who have died in order that we might enjoy the freedoms that we do. And there are a lot of traditions surrounding Memorial Day, Jay. But one of my most memorable traditions is when I was assigned to the Pentagon, and this is something that happens all around the world where military people are stationed, but we had what we call flags in, and all the soldiers in the military district of Washington were asked to go to Arlington National Cemetery, and we would get a bundle of flags, walk through that cemetery, and make sure that every person buried there had an American flag decorating their grave. It is a very sacred holiday, almost a holy day in America.
You know this better than anyone because you served as the chaplain in charge at Dover. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know about your experience there, what were you in charge of?
We were in charge of the dignified transfers, which are the reception of the bodies of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who have died overseas. It was an honor to do that. But yeah, during my time there, I was personally involved in the ceremonies of 1,116 deceased service members, and was able to sit down with each of their families as well. When you have that kind of experience up close and personal, and I'm not saying that I am unique, it was an honor to do it, but it makes Memorial Day very, very sacred and close to your heart.
When you had the families of and the loved ones of someone, of a soldier who died in service to the country, what did you tell them?
You listen more than you talk. And the thing that I found so moving and amazing, I never had a family, even in the middle of their grief, that did not express pride in the sacrifice of their loved one. And Memorial Day, you know, when I think about it, I think about the sacrifice not only of the men and women who died in military service. I remember these families. They are also heroes, and they have sacrificed. And so on Memorial Day, those families come to mind as well.
You had difficult ones. They're all difficult, I'm
yes.
sure. The dignified transfer, you do a lot of listening.
A lot of listening. There is nothing that you can say that's going to take away their grief and their sorrow. What I found out, Jay, often as I sit with the families whose loved one was out on the tarmac, we were getting ready to do a ceremony to receive their body, to give them their final homecoming. The families often ended up ministering to me and to my team more than we did to them. They were brave. They were grateful. They were proud of their loved ones who gave their lives in the service of our nation.
And I asked you the question also about when you're hearing from them. But I think about now, we've got conflict zones all over the world, and we've been talking about that on radio. We've got a situation now in North Korea, mm-hmm. that negotiations right now are off. That's a conflict zone. You've been there. You've been to the Middle East where we've got conflict ongoing. I mean, you think about the nature of the conflict, yet men and women continue to sign up to serve their country, knowing, as you said, it's dangerous.
You know, that was one of the most moving things about being at Dover, and that was something that my colleagues and I discussed often, and that is we have an all-volunteer army. No one has to serve, and yet even in the height of the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, young men and women from all over this great country would raise their hand and say, I want to serve. That service in and of itself was very, very moving and touching.
During the broadcast, you've heard during the bumpers the Lee Greenwood famous song, God Bless the USA, that Lee performed with our band here at our studios. I thought it would be a great way to leave this broadcast today for you to take a listen. Here it is.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Yeah, yeah, yeah. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, oh, and New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Oh, and I'm proud to be an American, the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And God bless our country.
Well, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. Let's not forget those families and loved ones who served our country and gave the ultimate sacrifice. Have a safe Memorial Day.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.